This podcast is for educational purposes only. The opinions expressed in this podcast do not reflect the official policy or position of the Ted Stevens Center, the U.S. Department of War, or the U.S. government.
Today, to wrap up the year, we welcome the director of the Ted Stevens Center, Randy Church Key, to take a look at the year behind us and the year ahead. Well, Church, it's been an interesting year as we sit here December 18th looking back. There's a number of things to recall, and I think if we just go chronologically, of course, we had a change of administration in January, and from day one to start off 2025, the Arctic was a key issue for the Trump administration. There was the executive order on maritime dominance, in which the Arctic was pointed out there. There was an executive order on unleashing Alaska's extraordinary energy potential, and that was just the start of the story. Of course, since then, there's been bringing critical minerals into that conversation. Just a couple months after January, the vice president brought a delegation to Greenland, which signified not only Greenland's significance, but also the Arctic's role in national security and in homeland defense. Later in the summer, there was the Trump-Putin summit that occurred right here on J-Bear.
A few steps from here.
Just a few steps from the Ted Stevens Center. So as we look back, what are some of your thoughts on this past year?
Well, first of all, thank you, Matt. And I think as we close 2025, it's important to really look back to see and really reflect on some of the strategic implications of what's happened on the calendar.
I do want to give an opportunity to even point out there's been some change with our Canadian allies as well. Of course, a change of administration there. A re-emphasis on Canada being an Arctic nation and real investment in the Canadian North. Of course, just yesterday here on J-Bear, we welcomed the Minister of Defense from Canada. And of course, the center here is just steps away from not only Alaska Command and 11th Air Force, but the NORAD, the offices and location here. Speak a little bit about the Canadian relationship at the practitioner level that we've seen recently.
Thank you for that. Well, that's actually, I'd like a moment to dwell on the latter before getting to the former. You know, the Stevens Center is a center that's committed to the practitioner, education, engagement, analysis, and research kinds of activities that the net result is a prepared Arctic security and defense practitioner. That's our product, U.S. and allied. And though, so in this regards, of course, Canada has been a strong practitioner level colleague of the center since our inception. And ultimately for us, the relationships that we maintain with that practitioner community and the armed forces, including, of course, colleagues, Strategic Joint Staff, Canadian Joint Operations Command, and to be sure, Canadian Joint Operations Command, Joint Task Force North and Yellowknife. That team is clearly a practitioner that's in and about the Arctic region, includes, of course, the Canadian Rangers that are really eyes and ears forward for the armed forces and really securing the northern flanks of Canada, and provides a great opportunity for a practitioner exchange of best practices, good ideas to help essentially ensure that the Arctic practitioners within the North American Arctic are all operating as interoperable or conducting operations interoperable as best they can be, and ultimately for us networked so that we can see the distances and really compare and contrast between, for example, the armed forces that are active duty armed forces here in Alaska, which include 11th Airborne, 11th Air Force, Alaskan Command, Alaska North Region, but also the Alaska National Guard that has a relationship, of course, with their Canadian Ranger counterparts, including Alaska National Guard's Alaska Scout Program, which it is, again, kind of replicates a little bit of what the Rangers are doing today in the northern parts of Canada. Great perspectives and great partnerships, frankly.
So as we look back on a dynamic year, makes me start thinking about what the next year will look like. But before I go there, I want to look back at one other thing. And that's when you had the opportunity to engage with General Guillot, Commander of NORAD NORTHCOM, and he gave you some guidance in how the Ted Stevens Center could support his homeland defense mission. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah.
And maybe we can transition that and how the Stevens Center is going to support that going forward.
Fantastic. So it's a privilege for the Stevens Center to support our line combatant command and our line combatant commander, General Gregory Guillot, who has actually, as a career battle manager, and looking at his headquarters in NORTHCOM there in Colorado Springs, Colorado, And kind of looking from a north-up scope view, if I can use that perspective. So imagine with you, you're looking at a radar scope that depicts North America. Mm-hmm. And in this, and you're looking north, well, that looks like Canada. If you're looking to the 10 o'clock position, mm-hmm. you're looking at Alaska, and then you're looking towards your 2 o'clock, you're looking out across the Atlantic Ocean mm-hmm. Into the European theater.
So sort of like a 10, 12, and 2.
10, 12, and 2, right. That includes, of course, from our standpoint as the center, we've kind of taken that 10, 12, and 2 mindset and broken it into aligned regions and really kind of using that as a gravitation or center of gravity to orient for education, engagement, and analytical programs. 10 o'clock we describe as Arctic Pacific, and then it allows us to take a look to that viewpoint of the shorelines of Alaska and Alaska's western regions, view the Arctic Alaska that goes into the Bering and Chukchi regions, and by extending that below into the North Pacific below that of the Aleutians, and just seeing the defense concerns from that geographic region. When you look to mainland Alaska properly, all the way to essentially the eastern shores of Greenland, you're really looking there mm-hmm. at the essentially the what General Gee, we're shorthanding for 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
So Canada and Greenland within the Kingdom of Denmark. Once you get to the eastern shores, past the eastern shores of Greenland, now you transition from what is now General Geo's combatant command areas of responsibility into that of Commander U.S. European Command. Mm-hmm. And that goes essentially from the eastern shores of Greenland all the way essentially to the Bering Sea through Russia.
Okay.
But for us, for the Allied Arctic, we kind of just bifurcated at the Finnish-Russian border. So essentially east of Greenland across that transatlantic into the Nordic spaces. So 10, 12, and 2 on the Arctic Pacific side, it gives us a chance to really not only focus on those defense concerns that are deeply aligned to homeland defense, but also the campaigning objectives as you protect further forward. The Aleutians provide a very strategically important but complex and difficult homeland defense challenge. So here's an opportunity to work with allies and partners in the Western Pacific. If you think about defense in depth, that includes, of course, into Commander U.S. Indo-Pacific Command's region responsibility, for example, Japan, the Republic of Korea, and allies and partners in the Pacific that are aligned to our national security interests, and we have the share of that mutual interest. Same goes when it comes to the 12 o'clock, working with both Canada and Kingdom of Denmark for Greenland and the Canadians and that defense relationships there. And then within the European theater, thinking about the aspects of how that relates to not only homeland defense, but also how that relates to transatlantic Arctic security. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, fantastic.
So if I'm understanding this right, General Guillot is commander of U.S. NORAD NORTHCOM, says Church, as director of the Ted Stevens Center, I need you to help me defend my 10, 12, and 2 o'clock approaches, can I use that word, to the homeland. I need you to help me provide education, research, and engagement programs that support the defense of the homeland from those particular approaches, the 10, right. if it's a clock, the 12, and the 2. And from those vantages, as you outlined, if you looked at the 10, you have NORTHCOM meeting INDOPACOM, and then all the allies and partners that exist within that region,
right?
Which, of course, could bring in Japan and Korea and some other Indo-Pacific nations. And then for the north, as you outline, and mostly a NORTHCOM AOR, but of course highlights the relationship with the Canadians and the Kingdom of Denmark vis-a-vis Greenland, and then to the east, then of course this is where we see many NATO members, and then of course NORTHCOM meeting UCOM. So that's right. That's the picture I'm painting. Does that seem accurate to you? Okay. With that picture in mind, then, Ian, if we bring it a little bit sort of inside the center, now the Ted Stevens Center, as we look ahead, the authorities of the center, as you know, education, engagement, research, and analysis. What sort of programs are upcoming this year that are going to support those particular approaches, the 10, 12, and 2?
Well, let's start with the engagement piece first. And I do want to say thanks to you for the incredible work you've done as Associate Director for Strategic Engagement for the Center for 3+ years. You've done a magnificent job in this regard, Matt, in helping organize these important exchange dialogues with our allies and partners that include, of course, the Allied Arctic, but also includes allies in the European theater, into, of course, North America with our Canadian allies dearly, and also into the Arctic Pacific, where we've been able to make inroads and help understand that Arctic, essentially mutual security interests with, for example, Japan, Korea, and even such unique instruments as the Quad, which is a dialogue that's happening between the United States, Japan, India, and Australia. So when I look at these regional security dialogues, was part of an overall biennial program plan for us that we provide, as all region centers do. We do 2 years of planning, execute 1 year at a time, but each year we add another 2 years. So you're always having a defense in depth on planning and programming for this, each of the regional centers. So for us, we're looking at essentially a series of regional security dialogues that ultimately will help buttress a flagship event that we host in the fall. So Arctic Pacific Security Dialogue, mm-hmm. which is really focusing on that 10 o'clock.
Yep.
That essentially the North American Arctic Security Dialogue, which we've done several iterations of. And the shorthand for that is on the road from Nuuk to Nome. Mm-hmm. We've done workshop in Nuuk. We've done a workshop in Iqaluit. We are looking forward to hosting the next workshop here in Alaska. We may cycle back next year to Canada, but essentially somewhere along that road from mm-hmm. Nuuk to Nome.
Covering the 12.
Covering the 12 o'clock. Then we have a new workshop approach that we're using with essentially working with the security-minded folks within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in the Icelandic government. Mm-hmm. A transatlantic Arctic security dialogue that's focused there on Iceland's unique geographic spot and geographic perspective there in the mid-Atlantic at the doorstep of the Arctic in that mid-Atlantic. And then lastly, something we've done with the Marshall Center really now for since 2021 is the High North Security Dialogue. Historically done in person in Garmisch-Partenkirchen in Germany with the George C. Marshall Center. This year conducted virtually. And this next year we're discussing with our colleagues here how we should proceed and what location should we proceed with would be most relevant based on the current programmatic and fiscal environment and also that of our allies in the European theater. So again, RSDs, regional security dialogues, it hits that 10, 12, I'm gonna say one and two, if you will, but really defense in depth. Following all of that, we're looking to host the Anchor Security and Defense Dialogue, a flagship event we host at the Hotel Captain Cook, and that's where we're really bringing about 350, 400 folks together that really spans that 10, 12, and two. But also bringing a greater defense of our colleagues from the Indo-Pacific, mm-hmm. and involved, of course, not only the Stevens Center, but the Marshall Center European mm-hmm. Theater, the Inouye Center in Hawaii, potentially also the Perry Center in Fort McNair in Washington, D.C. But all of this together is supposed to really hit that engagement line of effort that supports General Guillot's campaigning for this theater. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, of course, is the education.
Yeah.
And the education program was what we started with this at the Stevens Center, and each regional center has really cut their teeth on their educational programs. For us, we were born during COVID, and in this, we were able to focus on using and leveraging Zoom in a virtual environment. We use Zoom events. We broadcast our educational programs here from the studio. And we tie in there with the School of Arctic Security Studies, our resident faculty, plus an array of adjuncts that are accredited to the center and that partner with us in delivery of an incredible array of virtual programs, which includes the Arctic Regional Security Orientation Course, Arctic Multi-Domain Legal Course, Arctic Contested Logistics Course, Arctic Operational Risk Course, Understanding the Arctic Operational Environment Course, and NATO in the North. Those are programs of record right now. We'll be adding to it, and these are all synchronous. We've already added to it this year asynchronous courses such as Arctic Military History Course, as well as Arctic Fundamentals Course. So a lot of education offers.
Yeah.
And again, those are all principally done in person, in virtually, but we have the ability to do essentially mobile education team mm-hmm. to meet essentially the senior level leader concerns, and again, at geographic places that matter to them. Mm-hmm. And the last thing,
on demand, by request, or tailor-made, or adapted to the needs of the customer.
And we're doing, for example, a tailor-made one for the two-star level at combatant commands that plan for that into the February timeframe, as an example. Tailored, mobile, shortened to really meet their demanding schedules.
And have you seen I'm just curious, since the center's inception, about 4 years ago now, I guess?
Yeah, we're four and a half years in.
We opened the program talking about some of the geopolitical events that have transpired over the last 4 years. Has there been a uptick in demand signal for two-star leveling up to get smart on the Arctic?
True, to be sure. and rather so, because, you know, a lot of flag general officers who serve in the U.S. Armed Forces, as well as those of our allies, cycle through.
Yeah.
And we don't have the luxury as America to really create specifically geographically focused general officers, especially in the Arctic region. It doesn't have that sort of signature and demand. So for us, we do educate a new crew of folks who are serving in these new, as they transition, and help them to get on speed quickly, and also always serve as a resource for them. And the same context is not only the education engaged, but also the research side. We have a number of research tasks that are really aligned to those that are operational, focused on risk. Those things are focused on defense concerns, but also including, of course, and those are driven by the combatant command and ultimately also from our colleagues at the Office of Secretary of War and the Pentagon. But we have a unique opportunity also through the International Cooperative Engagement Program Polar Research, a 25-year memorandum of understanding between Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Canada, United States, and New Zealand, principally focused in the Arctic region, and principally focus on the security and defense concerns and the shortfalls in science and technology. So in this, we support, and I have the privilege of serving as U.S. principal to this, in under situational awareness, communication, position, navigation, timing, and similar sort of situational awareness, mission needs. So we can leverage this multinational lateral effort that principally is allies with the NATO, principally. To help get after the shortfalls and gaps and bring solutions together. And ultimately for us as a center, we always strive through living four key terms, innovation, experimentation, to deliver networks and solutions. And if it fits one of those categories, hopefully all four, then victory is achieved.
So a full slate of programming headed into 2026, to say the least. Maybe taking a step outside the center a little bit then in looking ahead and in combining your position here as the director, but also the years of experience you've had in uniform and, of course, working Arctic affairs. What catches your attention going into the next year? And maybe to calibrate the question a little bit, some of the initiatives that come to my mind are, the Golden Dome initiative in enhancing the homeland defense architecture, not only in Alaska, but of course across Canada and in other locations. So the Golden Dome initiative comes to mind. The recapitalization or the emphasis on icebreakers and the icebreaking fleet. Perhaps even things, if we get into kind of the technology sphere, how artificial intelligence might be impacting how we operate in the Arctic, largely a domain that's challenging to operate. And now when we get into autonomous systems, how can autonomy impact a region that's so vital? So what's on your radar? If you were going to kind of give somebody be on the lookout for or get smart on, if we were to sit in these chairs about a year from now, what will we have talked about?
Well, that's a fantastic question. So let me ground it where I think the priorities matter. The most pressing national need for us right now, and ultimately as allies, I hope all nations that would serve within the alliance, and also to our allies part of the Indo-Pacific, homeland defense. We ground our mindset in how do we best prepare a strong defense, and then ultimately, because it's a strong defense, it serves that deterrent value. And ultimately, right now, the speed of war is accelerating. Conflict is accelerating a generation right now because of Russia's continued onslaught in Ukraine and continued violation of their national sovereignty and holding Ukrainian terrain under Russian control. That war has accelerated the technology leap, as war tends to do. So it is now how can we best counter the things that are hard to program, especially program at speed for. Speed matters more than ever. Speed, of course, in the fight itself, things like hypersonics, for example, go faster, go faster, go faster, because ultimately going faster is harder to defend. but also faster in research, technology, and development. Countering unmanned aerial systems, as unmanned systems are, of course, increasing complexity and lethality, precision. So that is what I consider a huge issue, obviously, and very tactical and relatively inexpensive. You can flood the zone with drones in a way that was only just imagined in theories back when I was at War College, admittedly 25 plus years ago. In this case, now not quite 20, but 25 years exactly, I guess. When I look at specifically, and not only, of course, the small end, low end, easy to afford and just flood the zone with unmanned systems, but the higher end, hypersonics, how you defend against Golden Dome, of course, building and upscaling the construct of the Iron Dome for that Israel uses quite effectively. Yeah. When you think about the enormity of the scale, I've spent a lot of time flying across the North American Arctic, and think how you defend this with essentially the sensor and shooter array that would actually counter ever more sophisticated attack platforms. It is like overwhelming to think about what sort of architecture and sort of the speed you have to be able to act at to counter the lethality threats to our nation. So again, zeroing in, homeland defense matters. And homeland defense that also includes continental defense, total defense that exists in the Nordic and Baltic nations, and ultimately have extending this mindset that the Aleutians remains a key terrain that needs to be defended. That's where if we are defending there, we're actually defending further from there. But if you can't defend there, it's really hard to defend essentially the American mainland, Alaska, and continental United States, as well as continental Canada.
Can you, I guess, to kind of highlight who's involved in some of this, can you give us an example of some of the people who've been on your calendar lately? They're walking into the center to have meetings or on Zoom calls, because it's not just military, it's not just other general officers. It's a full slate of people ranging from academia to industry. Can you, if you can recall anyways, just to give an example, who's all part of this cooperation, security cooperation effort in order to support homeland defense initiatives?
Well, so first of all, it's a very complicated question. And certainly I have to go back to it's been a complicated, busy year. But I think it's important is that we're, to me, in the simplest terms, as opposed to calling individual names out, I would offer this, that perhaps the better way to look at it is that the different communities are concerned about it. And so for us, this is where we're trying to establish partnerships to help essentially the greater we. We're now working ever more closely with the Geophysical Institute, University of Alaska Fairbanks, as they are working essentially university-affiliated research center under the auspices of NORAD NORTHCOM.
Right.
But also working, of course, with the national labs, the Armed Forces Research Labs, Air Force Research Lab, Navy Research Lab, Office of Naval Resources. They are trying to work across their respective communities. And then industry, of course, matters as they offer solutions, listening and learning for what industry is thinking about this. But ultimately, trying to find a way and just as people ask questions, well, here's perhaps how you should maybe approach it. So providing, advice that hopefully is helpful, because all of us who serve in government, would like to help point people towards, hey, this is more relevant to focus here as opposed to here. Mm-hmm. So from my vantage point, these are early days that, the President of the United States has spent a lot of time and effort framing the argument. He's really provided, I think, a very unique defense challenge for industry to tackle. I think the Department of War now has really leaned in and trying to solicit inputs from across industry. There's a streamlining on this going on in the Pentagon. But strategically, perhaps more so than in a generation, you're seeing a desire from the military leadership of our nation, the defense military leadership of our nation, trying to find ways to speed up the ideas and solutions. And we can't take a bureaucratic approach. It's kind of the mindset that we hear from DC. And I think they're exactly right. Mm-hmm. If we take a bureaucratic approach, well, I'm going to say that the adversaries will beat us. And they will hold us, our national interests, at risk. And so for me, we do need to look specifically at how we move faster, reduce the bureaucratic hurdles without subjecting them to bureaucratic chaos. So process has to matter. But partnership is perhaps more important than ever, because solutions are not going to be embedded in any one place. It's going to be really bringing all the solutions together, canvassing the enterprise, but really coalescing around ideas that stick.
Hence, people from applied physics lab, say John Hopkins coming through the door, and you mentioned the Geophysical Institute from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, you mentioned national labs, even the federally funded research development centers. On top of course, our partners and allies coming through the door to talk about how we're going to work these things together. Of course, the services, on and on and on we go.
And there's a huge array of, I think about our colleagues at FFRD, the Federal Funded Research Development Center, like MITRE. Fantastic, they do incredible work. Again, I worry that I'm going to leave someone off because there's such there's an array of patriots that are trying and putting their best energies towards it. I believe that the solutions are found by taking a rising tide floats all boats mindset as opposed to zero sum. In this, we can find something all we can find common interest to work together.
Church, it's been an interesting year. It's been a dynamic year. Certainly, the year ahead is postured to be the same. Before we part ways and wish each other a happy holidays, any final thoughts from your seat there?
Well, first of all, thank you. I'd like to take a moment to say, reflect on two things. Number one, it's a privilege for the Stevens Center to be a part of the Department of War and our ability to help support U.S. and allied defense and really defense of the Arctic flanks of our nation and ultimately of the alliance that we're a part of. But it is, I believe General Gill was actually brilliant with making the idea simplified by the defense equation for us is 10, 12, and 2, and I add 1 into that. 10, 12, 1, and 2 allows us to actually take a region-by-region perspective, looking at the strengths and areas for improvement. We need to set conditions in order to help ensure that our adversaries today is not the day to mess with the United States of America or the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or with any of our allies which we hold a bilateral security relationship. Today is not that day, and by the way, tomorrow's not either. And the day to follow, we hope they feel the same way. So that's important that we're just part of that enterprise. An honor to be part of 6 regional centers of the Department of War. It was an honor to support the 6th Secretary of War for Homeland Defense and American Security Affairs, but also General Guillot, the commander of NORAD NORTHCOM, and then certainly working as regional center family and as the executive agency provided by us by DSCA, Defense Security Cooperation Agency. It's one big family team, all working hard and under difficult circumstances to be faster, more relevant today, and then even more so tomorrow. That all matters. It is a family business. Now here's an opportunity for a future. For us, we as a center, while we have these 3 essentially mission areas that provide us by the Congress, we have 3 specific programmatic approaches for them. One thing we do with the center is a little bit different. And this is aspect than the other 5 regional centers. And this is the idea of national and Arctic interest chairs. Today we have national chairs that have been established to us from Canada, Norway, and Sweden. We're in work to create this with Finland, Denmark, and Iceland, essentially cover the Allied Arctic with national chairs accredited to the center. So it helps us in this regards. One more line of collaboration that works with our senior defensive that we work with to include, of course, our reach out to the senior defense officials in the U.S. embassies across those nations, the Associated Office of Defense Cooperation, and ultimately in partnership with both NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM and U.S. European Command. Those chairs, of course, nationally are also complemented by Arctic interest chairs, where we have Arctic interest chairs that involve NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We have a chair established to us on Arctic Economic and Energy. We're establishing a chair on Arctic Science and Research. Another chair being focused on Arctic infrastructure and research, or analysis, excuse me. And a number of other chairs, essentially about 11 in total on the interest side of the equation. But it's my privilege, and as we kind of transition this current chapter of tenure service together to the next, to say thank you, Matt, for your service here as the Associate Director for Strategic Engagement. You just were installed a few days ago as the Director of the Defense Innovation Unit Upper Midwest at St. Paul, Minnesota, part of the Defense Innovation Unit Enterprise. And for us, we now have the privilege to establish you as our newest Arctic Interest Chair, essentially under that DIU, Defense Innovation Unit. So you can help us work as part of the family of bringing industry and ever closer collaboration with government on this security and defense equation. And so with this, Matt, we, of course, offer our thanks for your willingness to serve in the chair capacity. We look forward to working with you and your parent organization to establish a strong partnership via a memorandum of agreement between DIU Upper Midwest to the Stevens Center, and then also help us work across as you graciously support us as in our engagement in educational programs, have you also continue this as an adjunct to the center. We also look forward to investing you as part of our the work that we provide to the Office of Naval Research for the International Partner Engagement Program for Polar Research. So we have four great lines of effort going forward with you. So it's not saying goodbye, it's just see you later. And by the way, we'll see you just in a few days, because we'll be on the step working together in something to the future. So thank you. 3+ years of work. And actually for us, we've been working much longer than the 3 years we've actually been in the center.
It's been a privilege to work and serve here and serve the hostess of Arctic Connections here. And I feel like our work is just beginning.
Just beginning.
Church, thank you for the opportunity to serve and for the gift of your time, today.
Sir.
And with that, we'll call it a day.